Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Monday, April 15th, 2024. The first criminal trial of a former U.S. president begins in New York City. Donald Trump charged with falsifying business records to cover hush money payments. And right away, many potential jurors are dismissed after they say they cannot render an impartial judgment. President Joe Biden speaks of the unprecedented military effort to defend Israel against Iran, declaring, "Together with our partners, we defeated that attack." Meanwhile, Israel is still deciding how it will respond to the weekend's assault by Iran with 300-plus missiles and drones fired at Israel. It is tax day in the United States, deadline for almost all Americans to file their federal tax returns. We'll hear from IRS Commissioner Danny Werfel about the new pilot program for free direct online filing. And Congressman Joe Courtney, Democrat of Connecticut, whose district includes University of Connecticut, celebrates the Huskies' second consecutive men's basketball Division I title from March Madness. The parade was this weekend. We begin in New York, where Donald Trump, 2024 Republican presidential candidate, attended the first day of the first criminal trial ever of a former president. He is required to be there since these are criminal charges. Donald Trump has pleaded not guilty to 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in an effort to cover up hush money payments to former porn actress Stormy Daniels and Playboy playmate Karen McDougal to keep them from talking about alleged affairs those women say they had with him. If found guilty, Donald Trump faces up to 4 months in prison. In addition to all the media covering the trial, there were some protesters on both sides that showed up outside the courtroom.
No one is above the law. No one is above the law. Trump is not above the law. Trump is not above the law.
USA! 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 USA!
Outside the courthouse in New York City. Before the trial began, about 9:30 a.m. Eastern, Donald Trump spoke to reporters.
"This is an assault on America. Nothing like this has ever happened before. There's never been anything like it. Every legal scholar says this case is nonsense. It should never have been brought. It doesn't deserve anything like this. There is no case." And they've said it. People that don't necessarily follow or like Donald Trump said this is an outrage that this case was brought. This is political persecution. This is a persecution like never before. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And again, it's a case that should have never been brought. It's an assault on America. And that's why I'm very proud to be here. This is an assault on our country. And it's a country that's failing. It's a country that's run by an incompetent man who's very much involved in this case. This is really an attack on a political opponent. That's all it is. So I'm very honored to be here. Thank you very much.
Mr. President,
don't
believe that.
This is going to cost
you
the White House.
That was Donald Trump outside the courtroom in New York City early morning. And during the day, there were pre-trial matters discussed, including what evidence will be allowed to be presented. That Access Hollywood video of Donald Trump caught on the hot mic a couple of years ago describing grabbing women sexually without their permission will not be played for the jury. But the judge says that internal Donald Trump campaign emails describing the campaign's reaction to it can be admitted. Also, prosecutors have asked the judge to fine Donald Trump $3,000 for his social media posts about witnesses saying that violated the gag order. The judge will hear arguments about that on April 23rd. And today, the first group of potential jurors were vetted. Jury selection is expected to take some time. CNN reports mid-afternoon more than half of the prospective jurors in the first batch of 96 people have been excused after saying that they couldn't be fair and impartial. The press pool estimates at least 50 people were let go for that reason. Judge Juan Merchan asked potential jurors to raise their hands if they believe they cannot be fair and impartial. He then began excusing those jurors one by one. That was from CNN. About 5 p.m. Eastern, after the day was finished in the courtroom, day one of the trial, Donald Trump again spoke to the press.
"So thank you very much. We had some amazing things happen today. As you know, my son is graduating from high school, and it looks like the judge will not let me go through the graduation of my son, who's worked very, very hard. He's a great student. He's very proud of the fact that he did so well. And I was looking forward for years to have graduation with his mother and father there. And it looks like the judge isn't going to allow me to escape this scam. It's a scam trial. If you read all of the legal pundits, all of the legal scholars today, there's not one that I see that said this is a case that should be brought or tried. It's a scam. It's a political witch hunt. It continues, and it continues forever. And we're not going to be given a fair trial. It's a very, very sad thing. In addition, as you know, next Thursday, we're before the United States Supreme Court at a very big hearing on immunity. And this is something that we've been waiting for a long time. And the judge, of course, is not going to allow us. He's a very conflicted judge. And he's not going to allow us to go to that. He won't allow me to leave here for a half a day, go to D.C. and go before the United States Supreme Court because he thinks he's superior, I guess, to the Supreme Court. And we got a real problem with this judge. We have a real problem with a lot of things having to do with this trial, including the D.A., because you go right outside and people are being mugged and killed all day long, and he's sitting here all day with about 10 or 12 prosecutors over nothing. Over nothing. Over what people say shouldn't be a trial. So I just want to thank you very much. But that I can't go to my son's graduation, or that I can't go to the United States Supreme Court, that I'm not in Georgia or Florida or North Carolina campaigning like I should be, it's perfect for the radical left Democrats. That's exactly what they want. This is about election interference. That's all it's about. Thank you very much.
Donald Trump, former president, 2024 Republican presidential candidate, and criminal defendant, day one of the hush money trial in New York City. C-SPAN spoke to USA Today Justice Department correspondent Bart Janssen about what he expects in the coming weeks in terms of testimony.
Well, we've already seen Michael Cohen testify about many of these accusations. I was in the room for that in the House in February of 2019, but it'll be interesting to see how he holds up under cross-examination, basically how the accusations are portrayed. If Stormy Daniels is called, I'll be interested to see how she testifies. This will be her first chance, basically, to make her case in a case that she argues she never wanted to be a participant in. She tried to sign a non-disclosure agreement. She wanted it to go away. And so I'll be very interested to see how the witnesses testify and how they hold up under cross-examination.
Bart Janssen, USA Today Justice Department correspondent on C-SPAN this morning. This is just day one, and the jury selection has only begun. That's expected to take a couple of days, if not a couple of weeks. At the White House, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre was asked whether President Joe Biden is following the trial of Donald Trump.
Is the president going to be paying any sort of attention or will be briefed on the criminal proceedings of former President Trump in New York?
Well, as you know, the president is pretty busy today. He has two bilats, as you know, as you just saw with the Iraqi prime minister and one with the Czech Republic. So it's a busy day focusing on obviously our national security priorities and continuing these strong alliances that we have with these two leaders, obviously two separate meetings, and continuing to continue to deliver for the American people. I'm sure he'll get an update at some point today, but his focus right now are the meetings that he has and what he continues to do every day.
And setting aside the fact that the former president is the current president's general election candidate or challenger for this year, what is President Biden and the White House's reaction to this moment in time? I mean, it is a historic occasion. Occasion's a bizarre word to say, but you have a former president going on criminal trial for the first time in history. So what is the White House's reaction to that?
I do want to be super mindful, even me commenting on that, and it is an ongoing case. I just want to be super, super mindful and not comment on an ongoing case, even if it's asking an opinion about the historic nature of what's happening and what's going to occur in the next couple of weeks. So do want to be mindful. And he happens to be, as you just said, a presidential candidate for 2024. So going to be mindful. The president's going to continue to focus on the week ahead. He's going to be traveling, as you all know, to Pennsylvania. He has two important bilats today, and it's always about the American people for this president, and that's going to be his focus.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre at her news conference in the White House. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina posting on X, the New York case is truly election interference. This spectacle put on by Manhattan's liberal DA Alvin Bragg is dangerous to the rule of law and the future of the presidency. It will do enormous damage to how the law is used in politics. And Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island, quote, tweeting a Daily Beast article that has the headline, "Trump's out-of-control antics simply won't work in court." Senator Whitehouse adding, "Honest courtrooms are our bulwark against the lying and bullying of the powerful." This is Washington Today. New York Times writes, Israel's war cabinet met again on Monday as it faced growing international pressure not to retaliate against Iran for its missile and drone attack over the weekend, even as some far-right members of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government call for an aggressive response. There was no immediate indication of what, if anything, the cabinet has decided. Mr. Netanyahu faces a delicate calculation how to respond to Iran in order not to look weak while trying to avoid alienating the Biden administration and other allies already impatient with Israel's conduct of the war in Gaza. While the United States, Britain, and France strongly condemned Iran's assault and stepped in to help thwart it, their calls for restraint highlighted the intense pressure Israel was facing to avoid fueling a wider Middle East conflict. The Iranian aerial assault, itself a retaliation for a strike that killed Iranian commanders in Syria, was the first time that Tehran had launched open attacks against Israel from its own soil. Some of the reporting by the New York Times. President Biden spoke about this at the start of a meeting in the White House Oval Office with the Prime Minister of Iraq.
Before I begin, I want to discuss some of the events that took place in the Middle East over the past weekend. As you know, Iran launched an unprecedented aerial attack against Israel, and we mounted an unprecedented military effort to defend Israel. Together with our partners, we defeated that attack. The United States is committed to Israel's security. We're committed to a ceasefire that will bring the hostages home and preventing conflict from spreading beyond what it already has. We're also committed to the security of our personnel and partners in the region, including Iraq.
President Biden in the White House Oval Office with the Prime Minister of Iraq. President Biden spoke with the other leaders of the G7 countries on Sunday, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and Great Britain, and they put out a joint statement that begins, "We, the leaders of the G7, unequivocally condemn in the strongest terms Iran's direct and unprecedented attack on Israel. Iran fired hundreds of drones and missiles towards Israel. We express our full solidarity and support to Israel and its people and reaffirm our commitment towards its security." Some of the statement by the G7 leaders. In Great Britain, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak made a statement about this in the House of Commons.
Mr. Speaker, on Saturday evening, Iran sought to plunge the Middle East into a new crisis. They launched a barrage of missiles and attack drones over Iraq and Jordan and towards Israel. The scale of the attack and the fact that it was targeted directly at Israel are without precedent. It was a reckless and dangerous escalation. If it had succeeded, the fallout for regional security and the toll on Israeli citizens would have been catastrophic. But, Mr. Speaker, it did not succeed. In support of Israel's own defensive action, the United Kingdom joined a US-led international effort, along with France and partners in the region, which intercepted almost all of the missiles, saving lives in Israel and its neighbours. We sent additional RAF Typhoons to the region as part of our existing operations against Daesh in Iraq and Syria. And I can confirm our forces destroyed a number of Iranian drones. We also provided important intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance support for our partners. Mr. Speaker, our pilots put themselves in harm's way to protect the innocent and preserve peace and stability. I spoke to the RAF earlier today. They are the best of the best, and I know the whole House will join me in expressing our gratitude. Mr. Speaker, with this attack, Iran has once again shown its true colours. They are intent on sowing chaos in their own backyard, on further destabilising the Middle East. Our aim is to support stability and security, because it is right for the region, and because, although the Middle East is thousands of miles away, it has a direct effect on our security and prosperity at home. So we are working urgently with our allies to de-escalate the situation and prevent further bloodshed. We want to see calmer heads prevail. and we are directing all our diplomatic efforts to that end. Yesterday, I spoke to my fellow G7 leaders. We are united in our condemnation of this attack. We discussed further potential diplomatic measures, which we will be working together to coordinate in the coming days. I will also shortly be speaking to Prime Minister Netanyahu to express our solidarity with Israel in the face of this attack and to discuss how we can prevent further escalation. All sides must show restraint.
The British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak addressing the House of Commons in London. Returning to Washington, D.C., the White House National Security Communications Director John Kirby joined the White House news conference and told the reporters he wanted to correct some of their reporting.
I'd like to take just a few minutes to correct the record on a few points that have come out in the last several hours. I've seen reporting that the Iranians meant to fail, that this spectacular and embarrassing failure was all by design. I've also seen Iran say that they provided early warning to help Israel prepare its defenses and limit any potential damage. All of this is categorically false. To coin the phrase from the president, or steal a phrase from the president, it's malarkey. This attack failed because it was defeated by Israel, by the United States, and by a coalition of other partners committed to Israel's defense. So let's be straight. Given the scale of this attack, Iran's intent was clearly to cause significant destruction and casualties. Iranian leaders launched so many missiles and other munitions because they knew that many were going to be defeated. But the aim was to get as many of them through Israel's defenses as possible. Now, I've also seen this speculation about messages passed forth and warnings. We did receive messages from Iran, and they received messages from us too. But there was never any message to us or to anyone else on the time frame, the targets, or the type of response. In fact, before yesterday, it was presumed that 100 ballistic missiles might overwhelm even the best defensive systems. That was Iran's intent, and as you all saw for yourself, it didn't work. This attack was defeated thanks to our preparations, to a coalition of committed partners, and to Israel's remarkable defensive systems.
White House National Security Communications Coordinator John Kirby, part of his opening statement today in the White House news conference, reporters pressed him on how the Biden administration views Israel's weighing what to do next.
John, Israel is reportedly looking at options that would send a message to Iran but not cause casualties. Is the administration presenting alternatives to Netanyahu?
This is an Israeli decision to make, whether and how they'll respond to what Iran did on Saturday, and we're going to leave it squarely with them.
Their decision to make, but are you making suggestions?
We are not involved in their decision-making process about a potential response.
And just, is the president, does he have any plans to speak to Netanyahu again?
I don't have anything on the calendar to speak to, but look, I mean, they've spoken frequently over the last 6 months. They'll absolutely speak again at the appropriate time.
Thank you, Karine. John, just one day before the attack, President Biden issued a warning to Iran, don't, and now the U.S. is not taking any part in an Israeli reprisal. So does that signal to Iran that it can defy the U.S. without facing any consequences?
I don't know, man. If I'm sitting in Tehran and I'm taking a look at what just happened on Saturday night, I don't think I'd be betting that the United States is not willing to get engaged here and help defend Israel. I mean, you had American fighter pilots in the air, in combat operations, shooting down drones and missiles that were heading towards Israel, as well as U.S. Navy destroyers at sea, knocking them down from there. So the message should be very clear to anybody. When the president says we're going to take our commitments to the region seriously, when we're going to help Israel defend itself, we got skin in the game, and we proved that.
I understand what you're saying about deterrence, but what about consequences?
As I just said, and Karine also led in, he had a conversation with G7 leaders. He'll be engaging with other allies and partners. We have seen swift condemnations about what Iran did from the international community, and we're going to be working with international partners to work up options to hold Iran appropriately accountable.
John Kirby is White House National Security Communications Advisor at today's White House news conference. Story from BBC News, Israel's former ambassador to the UN, Danny Danon, has told the BBC that his country does not want to start a full war with Iran, but would find the smart way to act in response to the drone and missile attack launched over the weekend. Danan is a member of the Knesset for Likud and close to Prime Minister Netanyahu. He tells the Hard Talk program that the government would take action to make sure that the leaders of Iran will think very carefully next time before they give the orders to send ballistic missiles and cruise missiles into Israel. That was the story from BBC News. And from Axios, the U.S. House on Sunday teed up more than a dozen new votes for this week on bills sanctioning Iran and its proxies in retaliation for a wide-ranging drone attack on Israel. The switch up from Republicans' plans to vote on several appliance-related messaging bills comes as lawmakers in both parties are pressing President Biden to take a hard line against Iran. House Republicans are first set to meet on Monday evening ahead of the first votes of the week, quote, regarding Iran's recent attack on Israel and defense supplemental funding, according to an invite obtained by Axios. Earlier today, at a time when members of Congress can speak on the floor on any subject they want, there was this from John Joyce, Republican from Pennsylvania.
Mr. Speaker, on Saturday night, the Israeli people were deliberately and brutally attacked when the Iranian regime launched over 300 missiles and drones meant to terrorize and kill civilians. If it were not for the defensive technologies that were developed here in the United States and the heroism of Israeli, British, French, and Jordanian pilots who took to the air to shoot down Iranian drones, these attacks could have resulted in far greater devastation and loss of life. It was President Ronald Reagan who said that we must secure peace through strength, and that weakness only invites aggression. Through his long history of appeasement, Joe Biden has failed to deter Iranian threats and ultimately has jeopardized our safety. It is time to send a clear message to Iran and its terrorist proxies that the United States stands firmly with Israel, our greatest ally and the only democracy in the Middle East.
Congressman John Joyce, Republican from Pennsylvania, on the House floor. On the Senate floor, this from the Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York.
I strongly condemn the attacks by the Iranian government and urge them to refrain from escalating hostilities. What Iran did was dangerous, unjustifiable, and threatens to plunge the Mideast into a widespread war. So I strongly urge the Iranian regime to cease their reckless behavior from both its forces and those of its proxies. Now, when the attack came, thank God Israel was ready. Israel was ready because of the U.S.'s ironclad commitment to its security. The night of the attack, I was in touch with senior administration officials who told me that with help from the United States, England, France, and some Arab nations, the overwhelming majority of all Iranian missiles and drone strikes were successfully intercepted. The damage to Israel, thank God, was minimal. Only one serious casualty was reported. We pray for her recovery. Today, above all, I breathe a sigh of relief for Israel, relief that injuries were minimal, relief that the damage was not worse. But of course, it was no accident that Israel ensured Iran's attack largely would be largely unscathed. On the contrary, Israel endured because America's support for Israel's security is ironclad. The success of Israeli missile defense, developed in cooperation with the United States and with U.S. funding, is a testament to the United States' long-standing security cooperation with Israel. It's why so few of Iran's missiles and drones ultimately hit their targets. So I commend Israel Defense Forces. I commend President Biden and our military leadership and our brave armed forces. And I commend our partners who work together with Israel to avert calamity. Iran's reprehensible attack against Israel has made a few things very clear. First, Israel is surrounded by adversaries who seek its destruction. We saw that on October 7th. We saw it again this weekend. We dare not waver in our commitment to help Israel defend itself from those threats. Second, the fact that so many nations came to Israel's aid, including some Arab nations, show Iran is becoming more and more isolated. Iran's attack should be swiftly and universally condemned. Their attack risks provoking a wider conflict in the Middle East, and we cannot have that. So I'm pleased that many nations banded together and held the line against the Iranian regime. Third, Israel's attack underscores the best way to help Israel is for the House to swiftly pass the Senate's bipartisan national security supplemental. The House must rush to Israel's aid as quickly as humanly possible. And the only way to do that is passing the Senate supplemental ASAP. In fact, there is no reason for the House not to move on the Senate supplemental as soon as today.
The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, on the Senate floor. C-SPAN spoke this morning with Eric Wasson, Bloomberg congressional reporter, about what Iran's missile and drone barrage against Israel over the weekend means for the U.S. House plans for that bill that would give money to Israel as well as Ukraine.
Eric Wasson, if folks go to Bloomberg News, this is your story from yesterday. House plans Israel aid vote and may add on Ukraine, according to the speaker. Take us through what happened over the weekend.
You know, this is really a pivotal moment for Speaker Mike Johnson and Ukraine aid, which has been stalled in Congress since the president requested about $60 billion back in the fall. The Senate passed a $95 billion Taiwan, Ukraine, and Israel package, and the House has not taken that up. It would pass the House, from my calculations and the opinions of most people, but the Speaker has been under pressure from conservatives not to bring it up. There's been an attempt to link it to border security. It's clear that link is starting to be broken, and now the Speaker may use the opportunity of the Iran attacks on Israel to move something similar. He's talked about making the Ukraine grants into loans, using Russian assets as a way to pay for it. So he has to make a decision probably in the next 24 hours whether to do that, to finally get this off his plate, or to do something which should frankly be more political, which is to try to pass again an Israel standalone bill. The House in February took up a $17 billion Israel bill. It failed. Some conservatives didn't like the fact it wasn't paid for, but mostly it was Democrats who brought that bill down by saying, you know, if we pass Israel aid alone, then Ukraine will just languish.
So this comes out over the weekend. What sort of reaction have you seen on the Republican side to Speaker Johnson floating this idea ahead of this week?
Well, his nemesis in the House is now Marjorie Taylor Greene. This is the conservative Georgia Republican who's filed a motion, started the process of ousting the Speaker. She was very angry by the government spending process in which the border was not essentially included. Border security was not attached to that bill. A shutdown did not ensue, a kind of real confrontation that she would like to see. And she filed this motion. She could trigger within 2 days a vote on that. But basically, she reacted over the weekend, saying we've got no briefing on this. We don't know what's going on. Her real focus has been Ukraine. She's in fact called funding Ukraine evil. She's really convinced that the war should just be ended by Ukraine ceding a lot of territory to Russia. And that's been her push all along. Now, Speaker Johnson went down to Mar-a-Lago to talk to President Trump on Friday to get his backing. And he sure did. You know, the president said the speaker's doing a good job. He even said that Marjorie Taylor Greene's motion was misguided. So he's got that sort of ace in the hole right now. That may enable him to move forward on Ukraine aid with a sense that his job could be somewhat secure.
Of course, a weekend with major movement on the international front, Iran's drone and missile attack on Israel, first time in history. The block of Republicans who have really been pushing for some sort of border component to this aid bill have foreign events just kind of overtaken their objections here?
No, I think they're still very much focused on that, securing the border first. One thing that the speaker has been saying is he's urging President Biden to take executive action. There are the same types of executive action, remain in Mexico, sort of closing down the border that President Trump took, but he was sued over. And Biden, President Biden has said he's studying that, so he's shown some openness. The sense is, though, that whatever the president would do would not go far enough to appease the conservatives. So, but it may give the speaker some cover to essentially move a Ukraine bill. For Biden, it's a very difficult political calculation. Certainly on the left, there's a sense that they don't want him to take these kinds of actions. It's kind of sort of demonizing immigrants and going along with the Trump line that immigrants, are very bad for the country.
Eric Wasson, Bloomberg congressional reporter on C-SPAN's Washington Journal this morning. A story from TheHill.com, the House Freedom Caucus is warning GOP leadership not to use Iran's attack on Israel over the weekend as justification to send additional aid to Ukraine. As lawmakers in both parties and chambers call on the lower chamber to pass the Senate-approved foreign aid package, which includes support for both Israel and Ukraine. In an official statement released Monday, the conservative group said the attack is a bogus justification to approve more assistance for Ukraine. They wrote, "Under no circumstances will the House Freedom Caucus abide using the emergency situation in Israel as a bogus justification to ram through Ukraine aid with no offset and no security for our own wide open borders." Instead, the group urged the Senate to take up the $14.3 billion standalone Israel aid bill the House approved in November, which also included an equal amount in cuts to IRS funding. That reporting by The Hill. Washington Today continues in a moment.
Hi there. I'm Jonathan from C-SPAN, along with my colleague, Ben. Since C-SPAN's founding 45 years ago, the media world has changed. Remember when there were just a few TV channels? Now we've got streaming, social media, apps, and more.
Through all of this, C-SPAN has stayed true to its mission of giving you unfiltered access to government wherever you get your news. As we navigate this challenging media environment with fewer people subscribing to traditional cable packages, our funding has been impacted.
That's why we're asking for your help to keep going strong for another 45 years. Please donate today at cspan.org/donate. Your contribution, large or small, helps ensure at least another 45 years of witnessing democracy in action.
Keep C-SPAN thriving in today's ever-changing media landscape. Visit cspan.org/donate to make your gift today. Thank you.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast on the C-SPAN Now mobile app, which is free, and wherever you find your podcasts. On this federal tax return filing deadline day for most of the country, residents of Maine and Massachusetts have until Wednesday, April 17th, due to state holidays. There are a lot of posts from elected officials on X. Senator Shelley Moore Capito, Republican of West Virginia, writes, "Americans don't want higher taxes. They don't want the Democrats out of control spending. Senate Republican Conference is committed to making everyday life more affordable for Americans and West Virginia families and helping them keep more of their paychecks." And Vice President Kamala Harris with this post, "On tax day, President Biden and I continue to call on Republicans in Congress to extend the child tax credit. Our plan would lower taxes for families and lift millions of children out of poverty. We'll never stop fighting to provide every child in our nation the opportunity to thrive." And during today's White House briefing, the press secretary Karine Jean-Pierre getting a question on taxes.
"Is there any indication that when the president asked for the richest Americans to pay their fair share, that inflation and the rise in gas prices are linked to that request?"
Say that one more time.
"Do you think that the rise in prices of gas and inflation, which is still rising, is linked to the president's request that the richest Americans pay their fair share?"
Look, here's what I will say. The way we see the economy is very different than the way Republicans see the economy and how we make sure we have an economy that works for all. Making sure that the wealthiest among us, the billionaires and corporations, pay their fair share, we believe is the way to go here, not putting that burden on everyday Americans. That's an economic policy that we believe in, and a policy that builds the economy from the bottom up, middle out, not trickle down. And so we're going to continue to lower costs, and we're going to ask those billionaires and corporations to actually pay their fair share. That's something Americans want to see. As it relates to inflation, we look at a trend here, and we have seen inflation moderate over the past several months. And that's important as well to note. But look, we see it very differently. We want to make sure we're protecting Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, lowering costs. Republicans don't want to protect that. And they want to give billionaires and corporations a tax break. That's not how we see this.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre during her news conference at the White House. Story from The Hill, the Democratic National Committee launched a digital ad buy that targets Republicans' tax policies on tax day, the committee first told The Hill. The ad buy is in key battleground states, including Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, and is targeted for Google searches for tax day. The ads link to a website MAGATaxScam.com, where the DNC argues that Republicans' tax plans would give tax breaks for the ultra-wealthy and big corporations while scamming hardworking families. That was reporting by The Hill. Congressman Wesley Hunt, Republican from Texas, posting on X, "Happy Tax Day, everyone. Just a friendly reminder that when Joe Biden tells you to pay your fair share, his son has been indicted on multiple charges for not paying his." Congressman Hunt attached this video, which has several clips from Fox News and Fox Business Channel.
Under my plan, nobody earning less than $400,000 a year will pay an extra penny in taxes.
63% of the IRS's recent audits targeted taxpayers with an income of less than $200,000 a year.
I'm not out to punish anyone. I'm a capitalist.
Warns middle-class families that the IRS is hiring tens of thousands of new agents to audit their taxes.
It would destroy capital, destroy productive investment.
All I'm asking is you pay your fair share.
Hunter Biden has been indicted on 9 tax charges in California.
Hunter Biden is asking a Los Angeles judge today to dismiss criminal tax charges against him.
Hunter Biden evaded more than $1.5 million in taxes.
We're going to go get those folks. They're going to pay their fair share.
But Mr. Biden's legal woes have now multiplied.
A video posted by Congressman Wesley Hunt, Republican from Texas, today. The clips coming from Fox News and Fox Business Channel. Story from AP. On this tax day, the IRS is promoting the customer service improvements the agency rolled out since receiving tens of billions in new funding dollars through Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act. From cutting phone wait times to digitizing more documents and improving the Where's My Refund tool to show more account details and plain language, agency leadership is trying to bring attention to what's been done to repair the agency's image as an outdated and maligned tax collector. That was from Associated Press. The IRS Commissioner Danny Werfel was interviewed on CNBC, and he talked about a new program to allow Americans to file directly online with the IRS for free.
One of the things that you are doing this year, and you're running a pilot program, which is fascinating, to effectively create a portal where people, some people, not a lot of people, but some people can actually file online. They don't have to use TurboTax. They don't have to do something else. They go straight to the website.
Yes, it's a new way of filing your taxes. First time we've done it online, direct with the IRS for free. It's called Direct File. And we ran a pilot this year. We were in 12 states. We had 19 million people in 12 states eligible.
And how many people, can you tell us how many people have tried to use it?
We know for a fact that it's in the tens of thousands, and I also know that in the last 24 to 48 hours, it's really ramped up in terms of the number of people who have filed using Direct File. The feedback on it has been great. We've heard from taxpayers that it is easy to use, it was quick. Of course, everyone loves the price tag. It's free.
It's free. You don't have to use TurboTax. You don't have to use an account. I mean, do you need an accountant? Or these are for relatively uncomplicated taxes.
Yeah, this year, the eligible taxpayer typically had a standard deduction, no separate business income. And you don't need an accountant. The reason why this is important is because we want taxpayers to have options for how they file. We're not saying use Direct File, it's the only way to go. We're saying when you come to IRS.gov, or you're searching what's the best way for me to file my taxes, it's better for you to have options. Right. So if you want to work with a software provider, you should.
The IRS Commissioner Danny Werfel this morning on CNBC. Later in the day, the Treasury Department said that the free IRS Direct File program hit 100,000 accepted returns. Wall Street today, the Dow down 248, NASDAQ down 290, S&P down 61. Congressman Joe Courtney, Democrat from Connecticut, went on the House floor today to celebrate the University of Connecticut men's basketball back-to-back national championships. Sixth title in 25 years. The victory parade in downtown Hartford was this past weekend, with thousands of fans cheering on the players and coaches riding atop a double-decker bus. Here's Congressman Courtney.
A couple days ago on Saturday in the city of Hartford, Connecticut, the capital city of the state of Connecticut, 60,000 people gathered to celebrate the parade that was held in honor of the UConn men's college basketball team, which, again, just a mere week ago on Monday, swept over the University of Purdue, a very good team, and secured back-to-back national titles. Mr. Speaker, that's the first time that's happened since 2007 when Florida University was able to do back-to-back titles. College basketball has changed a lot since then. The new rules allow players to transfer from one university to another with no loss of eligibility. The NBA continues to recruit even freshmen who play in the ranks of college basketball. So the ability of a university to repeat because of all of these factors that undermine continuity was really, I think, extraordinary that the UConn men were able to, after losing three players from last year's team to the NBA, losing other players to the portal, was still able to reload and under the amazing leadership of Coach Danny Hurley, was able to dominate both the Big East regular season tournament and then obviously the Final Four out in Phoenix, Arizona. Again, a great collection of players, some of whom, again, are going to be leaving soon. Donovan Clingan from Bristol, Connecticut, 7'2" sophomore. Tristan Newton, who won Big East Player of the Year, just, again, an amazing guard and just going to do great things when he moves up to the next level. Again, the women, at the same time, overperformed in their side of NCAA basketball. Again, this is a program that has been to the Final Four 23 times. This is a program that has won the national title 11 times. And Coach Gino Auriemma, who, again, is a genius, was able to cobble together a team when they had six players, some of their top players, who suffered year-ending injuries, and somehow make it to the Final Four again. And they battled a great team from University of Iowa, led by Caitlin Clark, to the final minute, final seconds, showing again what an incredible competitive spirit they have. Mr. Speaker, there's still some debate that you see with the sports pundits about who is the real blue bloods of college basketball and which is the capital of the world for college basketball. There is no question. Storrs, Connecticut, the home of the UConn Huskies, which is I have the honor to represent, is clearly the college basketball capital of the world.
Congressman Joe Courtney, Democrat from Connecticut, today on the House floor in Washington. UConn men's basketball coach Dan Hurley said at the victory parade on Saturday his team is planning for a three-peat next season. That's something that's not been done since UCLA ripped off seven consecutive National Basketball Division I titles, 1967 through 73. Thank you for listening to Washington Today. Subscribe to C-SPAN's free evening newsletter, Word for Word, and get the stories making headlines in Washington emailed to you every day. Sign up at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night.